to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, here we go. Let's run it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Most High Show. I'm your host, Christian. And today with me, we have some people hanging out in the new Most High Studios.
Yo.
We got Leslie doing quality control. Zach is on the ones and twos. And with me in the studio, in the seats of service, is the lovely Sarah with an H. Yo.
Hello.
Sarah with an H. Don't forget the
and
H.
And my man Reeves is in the building.
Hi.
And today our topic is living sober. And let me just preface the topic, okay? Living Sober is a popular recovery book that covers basic, sometimes cliche topics, but dissects valuable insight into these topics. In other words, keep it simple. So we're going to talk through some of the topics that's covered in this book, and we're going to share from our own personal experiences and opportunities to grow in some of these areas. One of the things I love about the Most High Show and the Most High community is that we bring people from all walks of life, faith, and approaches on a common ground of helping each other stop dying and start living. All right. So, in the home group that I was a part of, we would read this book every week. And I would try to avoid the day of the week that it was being read.
Skip day.
I try to skip that day. And then I would show up and I'd go, oh, crap, today is a living sober day.
Fake a phone call. Yeah. What happened?
Well, once I'm there, I'm there, you know. So it really dives into these topics. And so let's dive into the first one, all right? Because at the same time that it really dives into these things, there is a lot of wisdom in there, right? And I'll give an example. Like, it talks about what to do when you're at a party and other people are drinking, and what to say when someone offers you a drink when you're at a party where everyone's drinking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's very specific. And then it runs down several scenarios of possible responses that you could give in that scenario. Let's do the first topic. The first one is using the 24-hour plan. Hmm. Should we read from the book, or does you guys get what that means?
Like the one day at a time thing.
Yeah.
Just calling it 24 hours.
It's the 24-hour plan.
Kobe.
Yeah. Sorry. What do you think? What when you hear that, right? We hear that, and that's like a cliche saying, one day at a time, mm-hmm. 24 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. What comes to mind in your own experience with that and the first time you heard it, and what does it mean to you today?
Oh, well, today that's still way too much time to take at once.
Really?
It's like sometimes it's 5 minutes at a time. Sometimes it's still one breath at a time. Just depends on the situation. But when it comes to, I like some portion of the literature where it says, you know, upon awakening, we review the 24 hours ahead of us or something. I like that because then it's like looking at what is coming up and not, you know, having to freak out, spin out, ruminate. It's just, this is what's happening. And then I can break it down, being like, okay, and now I get to the first thing, then I get to the second thing, then I get to the third thing. But in each moment, I'm just taking my next step.
Yeah.
That's what that means to me today.
But is that hard? Is that easier to do now than it was in the beginning?
Oh, absolutely. It's still hard sometimes. Like, today it was easy. Yesterday it was easy. A couple weeks ago, it was not easy.
Yeah.
Right. You know, because some days, you know, it's like, oh, I got these things, but my bed is a lot comfier, and I'd rather spend 24 hours here.
Yeah. Well, sometimes that's the best you could do, right?
Mm-hmm. Like my sponsor says all the time, some days you just got to pull the sheets over your head and stay sober.
Yeah.
And that's how it is often.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For reasons you know, but.
Yeah.
I figured, I knew you knew when I seen her, the way she just looked at you. I was like, what happened?
Yeah.
What happened?
Inside information.
I think that's
like the title, Living Sober, mm-hmm. right? It's about, because that's the thing that takes us back out. Our life is life shit.
Yeah.
You know, bills, romance.
Life on life.
Life on life stuff. It's mm-hmm. that's the stuff that we'll just, for some reason, you know, we're not prepared for it, and or overthinking or thinking too far in advance and wondering what ifs and all that kind of stuff can really, it throws my mind into a, you know, chaos, which is already pretty chaotic.
Yeah.
I heard a clip, Steve-O, you remember that guy from Jackass?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a clip of him saying, and I know he didn't write this, but he read it somewhere where it said, "I didn't suffer the disease of alcoholism until I stopped drinking."
Mm-hmm.
Which it was, you know, I've been sober for a while, and that was the first time someone put into words exactly what I felt.
Yeah.
Because when I got sober, I feel like everyone else's life got better around me, but my life got harder immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And that's still the case today. Sorry if anyone's starting the journey, but hey, it is.
It is what it is, dude.
Yeah. So 24 hours.
Yeah. I like what she said, though. Like, some days I can do 24. Like, and same thing with me. A couple of weeks ago, bruh, like, I called you at, 2 in the morning outside of a prayer room?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going in here to pray. Like, I got to talk to God about this, bro. I'm going, like, so, and, you know, like, I'm not even going to say I've attempted recovery several times, but I've been in the rooms and been in programs, whether I was hiding from the feds or trying to make a girl happy or whatever. But, like, this time, those cliches aren't so lame to me. Before, I was like, one day at a time, yeah. But, bro, I get it now. Keep coming back no matter what. Like, bro.
I still hate that they make sense now.
I didn't say I like they make sense.
Yeah, I hate anytime I find myself, you know, like talking to somebody where then the phrase comes to mind and I'm like, it's the phrase, but it's a phrase for a reason.
Right. Play the tape all the way through.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I can't even pick a least favorite. I hate all of them, but they pop up in different situations. And it's like, oh, yeah, that's why that exists.
I was really glad to be able to answer that call. I was just happened to be up. Yeah. And
I texted you. I knew you would be. I just felt it, bro.
Yeah, because I've been to that prayer room.
Yeah.
And you do, and there's a few times. And when I leave, it's kind of like, dang, dude, I need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
You know?
I had been in there for like 2 hours.
Yeah.
And when I was in there, I got to talking to somebody, and they were like, oh, well, there's a guy here. He's actually about to be here, because they do 2 hour sets of who goes on the stage and sings. It's a prayer room where they open a sanctuary, and there's one person on stage either playing the guitar or playing the piano, just singing. And you can go in there and lay on the ground. You can go in there and do homework, Bible study. You can go in there and just do whatever you do. You just go in there and sit and stare at the
ceiling. 24 hours.
24 hours a day. And they were like, I was telling them a little bit about my story and, you know, the prison stuff. And they were like, man, we got a dude here who just did 10 years to the door. He actually does security and sings at the same time. I was like, well, that's fire. You know, like, and.
Did you get to talk to him?
Yeah, I did. I actually took a pass from my program that night just to stay up there because my curfew is midnight. But I took a pass to stay up there. And yeah, dude, I mean, talking to God, he told me, you need to talk to somebody, buddy. I talked to God. Then I talked to a couple other people. I don't even know if I like how you like laughing that much. Was that too Atlanta trashy the way I said, buddy?
When the Lord tells you, hey, you need to talk to somebody.
You need help, dude.
You need someone. You need a professional.
As a matter of fact, you know what? The dude I talked to, he was like, I'm not a professional. But I'll tell you this, Jesus is the counselor. I was like, bro, what? You was with me. He was with me.
Oh, you went up there, too.
Not that night. That was a different. Bro, listen, I was going through it. And my boy right there, man, that's my guy, bro. Like, I hadn't worked. And for like a month and a half, I was broke. I needed brakes on my car. It's a man of God right there, too. So he came in the house. I don't even think he had been inside from work yet. I looked at him. I said, bro, you know a little bit about what I got going on. I need to go to the prayer room. My brakes are bad. Will you take me? He was just like, man, come on, bro. No questions asked.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I was in there once in this prayer room. And this lady gets up there, and she's got like a loop pedal. And she starts something.
Mm.
And I'm like, man, I would get here when the freaking amateur hour comes on. And she was all offbeat and stuff. And I'm like, dude, I can't even concentrate on what I'm trying to do because this dang beat is not looping right.
It's the devil.
Well, after a minute, it was like I caught it. And then she started adding guitar and all these other pieces to it. And then I was like lost. You know what I mean? Because I was in a meditative state and the music was like tranced, but it wasn't like a standard, you know, count. It was a weird count. And that ended up being a pretty profound experience. And I'm thankful I hung in there for that offbeat.
For the offbeat.
Well, what's the other cliche phrase? Contempt prior to investigation.
There it is. Good. Way to bring us back to the topic.
Look, I don't got prayer room stories. I got bathtub stories because that's where I do my praying. Whoa, yeah. Hold up, when man. I'm going through it, it's a bubble bath. And I talk to the goddess and I'm like, all right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so what about this? Remembering that alcoholism, what?
Sarah with an H.
Sarah with an H.
Don't forget the H.
What the heck? Why are you thinking of my name right now?
Because that was just like, I've never known anybody to say, like, you just did that. That was stamped.
Yeah, what, calling God the goddess?
No, and like, just, she was like, bro, y'all got, I don't know, let's just not get on. I'm weird, dude.
All right.
Let me picked up on weird thing. Remembering that alcoholism is an incurable, progressive, fatal disease.
I want you to take this one.
I mean, I was still lost, bro. Say it again.
Remembering that alcoholism is an incurable, progressive, fatal disease. These are all chapters in the book. These are the titles of the chapters, is what I'm reading.
Ooh, do y'all really want me to answer that one?
I want you to answer that, please. One. This is my favorite topic.
Yes. Just remember, you're going to get to watch this in 2 years, so. And it's okay if your answer changes.
So you're telling me that alcoholism is an incurable disease.
Fatal, incurable, fatal, and progressive.
I disagree.
Okay.
I disagree.
Why?
Because I got Jesus, my boy. I'm not can I speak freely?
Dude, what
okay, I'm not an
no,
addict.
Please censor
not,
yourself.
Man, listen, he told me to remember the newcomer. He knows where I stand.
We're remembering the newcomer, you got to speak honestly, too.
I mean, bro, I'm not an addict. I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I was. But I'm not going to, me personally, I'm not going to say something that type, man, I'm not going to tell you I'm something that, to me, that's just tying me to bondage. Like, I'm not an addict. I'm not an alcoholic. Now, I believe there's a cure. Reeves, hey, man, I've only got 10 months and 12 days, but I ain't never had 90 days. And I'm not, like, this program, these rooms, and every person has got to figure out how they live sober.
Right.
And that's different for each person, but I disagree with that. Yeah. I mean, look, she getting ready to fire off, boy. But, you know, for me, I still go one day at a time. But for me, man, I disagree. Yeah. I think that, you know, you can, you know, and I really have just come to this over the last couple of months. And, I disagree. I think there's a cure.
Okay. Yeah.
For me, living spiritually fit.
Yeah. I think that what some of the literature says, which I really like this, which is what we have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual program. Mm-hmm. Would you agree with that statement?
I mean,
it would if you said you still lived one day at a time, right?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not trying to convince you of something different. You're not talking. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, I'll agree.
Because it's like we have what we have is like this. But I feel you. We talked about this in the last episode about language, the recovery language. You just did some recovery language work.
Can we not talk about that?
What does that mean? Not cussing?
No. So there's a lot of new recovery language out. And one of the big things is not calling yourself an addict.
Hey, bro.
You call yourself a person who struggled with substance abuse disorder and these kind of things because of the negative connotation of you connecting yourself to. I guess my response to what you're saying is the same response to anyone else who kind of says it. It's like, I think that when I realize that I can simultaneously be saint and sinner, and that the moment I acknowledge that I am a sinner, I receive my sainthood. But devoid of this acknowledgement of my need for something greater than myself, I'm no longer a saint. So these two things, which are kind of polar opposites, need to exist within the same space. Because for me to think I'm good, right? What keeps me reliant on this greater thing that got me to a place where I'm good? And it's the admission of my consistent inability to measure up, right? It's kind of like the believer who becomes very self-righteous because they're healed and they're saved, and it's all going to happen later in life. It's all going to, you mean in the next life. And so keeping the tension between those two is what feels very real to me, right? So when I'm saying to somebody I'm an alcoholic, I'm also somebody who has a nonprofit and a family that loves me. And when somebody who's in the pit goes, "You an alcoholic?" "Yeah." "Well, I ain't drank in 12 years, but I'm just like you. I'm no better, I'm no different. I just haven't had a drink in 12 years, right? The power that that has of connection to me is more valuable than, and the fact that it keeps me in a state of remembering who I am and what is required of me to live consistently in a peaceful state. That's my response to why I continue to. But I understand the tension, and I understand why people go, I don't want to call myself that anymore, because it pulls me down, right?
I mean, if you want to call me a drug addict, you can call me a drug addict, or they can call me a drug addict. I'm going to tell you I'm not a drug addict anymore. Yeah. I'm not. Right. Like,
yeah.
I was a bad one.
Yeah.
Overdosed on the regular, died on the regular, fixing to get a Narcan tattoo.
You were?
No, I'm going, going to. I'm going to. Like, bro, yeah. I got all these tattoos all over me. No, I've been overdosed and hit with Narcan like 9 times.
Yeah.
Those rookie numbers.
You know, like, I was only out of prison for like a year after Narcan was invented. Yeah. So like, that's 9 in a year.
Yeah.
For real.
Okay.
So what about you for this statement?
So
or would you like to retort?
I actually agree a lot with what you said, you know, especially bringing up, you know, the daily reprieve contingent upon the daily maintenance of your spiritual condition, because that's what I believe. And also, like, my experience is when I stopped calling myself an alcoholic, I didn't start drinking again. I found myself at a Greyhound buying crack, and I was homeless within a week. I was like, oh, I was like, how'd this happen? Like, I just liked wine too much. I liked rum too much. Why am I buying crack? I stopped calling myself an alcoholic. And so I will never stop calling myself an alcoholic. I'll never stop calling myself an addict. You know, some people, you know, it's one of those words that has, you know, it has that connotation like, oh, like that's a dirty word. I'm like, I don't care. It's part of my story. It's part of who I am. It's part of what has made me who I am today. And I can't forget where I came from. And so part of, you know, remembering where I came from is recognizing like, oh, I do things different today. Like I am an alcoholic. I am an addict. I still have thought patterns that, you know, like I call them junkie Sarah when they come back. I'm like, oh, junkie Sarah's coming back. Mm-hmm. When it's like, I'm like, you know, obsessing over something. I'm being crazy about something, or I'm like falling into a pattern or behavior that isn't something that reflects my sobriety. I'm still an alcoholic and I'm still an addict. And it's like, what some people say, they equate it to a cold. It's like, just because, you know, I don't have a cold right now, don't mean I can't catch the cold again. Because that's how I view it. If I don't maintain my spiritual condition on a daily basis, I will go back out. I almost went back out in December. You know, I wasn't maintaining my spiritual condition. It didn't matter that I had been sober over 2 years. It's just I stopped maintaining it. And I was like, oh, yeah. Where's that Snow White? Like,
do you have a cold?
Do I have a cold? Right now?
Yeah.
Uh-uh.
But it can come back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I used to be a gang member, but I'm not anymore. Mm-hmm. Am I supposed to say I'm a gang member?
Oh, that's completely different.
Oh.
Being a gang member, that's like, you know, I was a barista. I'm not currently a barista. Being a barista did nothing to change the chemistry in my brain, did nothing to change the hormones in my
Maybe
body.
Maybe not a barista, but let me tell you.
I'm just saying, when you put substances can alter your body, can alter your brain. And that's what I did with substances, was alter my body and alter my brain. And so, no, I don't think it will revert.
This is good practice for you next time you say this to somebody. You have not good objection handlers. Your sales, you know what objection handlers are.
Right? Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm not passionate about that.
Yeah. Right.
I really don't. Like, I'm just there to do a job.
Right. Yeah. No, I think there's a lot of people who would share your sentiment. And that's why I said this was going to be a good episode, because we're going to talk. We're all going to be very honest with where we're at and what's going on, you know? Yeah. I know a lot of people who are in the same would agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying, you know? That's what a lot of people have. A lot of people have problems with 12-step rooms because of that. It's like one of their primary issues with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And I see the validity. I see the validity of that, absolutely.
Yeah, and I can understand, like, you know, that, you know, where you're coming from, like, when you explain that, I get that, you know, like, when you say, like, tied to the bondage of it, you know, but for me, I had a train of thought. See, that's another thing, the drugs, maybe.
Yeah, I still try. Have you found my squirrel, bro? He was
You've been looking for that squirrel for an hour.
I'm telling you, that little, I'm gonna get a leash, bro.
So I do have one other thing to say on that topic, not to retort to you, but just that, I think what the Big Book and when they came up with that term, right, was pretty profound, because it was the first time in history that that behavior was kind of labeled as a disease, which was a really big jump. Because before that, it was just a moral issue. I'm talking about like in the 20s and 30s, right?
Hey, I heard something.
What?
I heard that they rewriting the Big Book.
Okay, we're not getting into that.
Yeah, we're not.
Okay. No. Why not?
Because we don't know
this
enough.
Is a recovery podcast.
I don't know enough.
Not a 12-step podcast. This yes, is not group I've heard conscience. I've
heard. That would be a good podcast of a group's group conscience. Oh, my God. Talk about that would throw some people off.
Oh, goodness.
But I personally, what I think when the book talks about alcoholics, I think what defines an alcoholic is a spiritual condition. I think drinking alcohol is a symptom of that spiritual condition. But there's a spiritual condition of what an alcoholic is, and that there's something inside of me that needs external validation consistently. And I will, that part, I don't crave drugs. I don't crave alcohol. I don't go through bad days and go, I wish I could get high. But the piece of me that still needs external validation from my wife, from society, from money, from God, from friends, that part of me is the thing that I think was what makes me alcoholic. Not that I used drugs and alcohol. It's that I have this insatiable need, which requires me to fill that need through spiritual means. But which was one thing I thought you were going to get into on your 24 hours a day, which was your spiritual program.
Yeah,
because that came up.
My squirrel ran over there for a second, and like
because I'm prettier.
But you were talking about that.
That one ran to you.
Your squirrel? Yeah. But then it ran off with my squirrel.
No,
got married. Our squirrels got married.
You know, they're trying to get in. Never mind. I mean,
but you brought this up in the conversation before the show, yeah, which was like.
But hold on, you was going to me and my. No, I'm about to say something about something you just said too. Okay, yeah. For me, being spiritually fit.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to do my workout.
Right.
So
that not does, just a way of thinking. No, it's a whole life.
It's a whole way of life. Like, it's not just meetings. It's not just sponsorship and network and meditation and prayer and like living right and doing the next right thing. It's all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, bro, I get so much confirmation and affirmation from the Most High, boy. There literally ain't no high like the Most High. When I'm doing that and I'm getting all these God shots and all this spiritual stuff happening, bro. Like, I heard somebody last night say that they were just burnt out. And yeah, keep in mind, you got 12 years. You got what, 2.5 years?
Yeah.
I've got 10 months and 13 days. So, and bro, listen, I get on my own nerves. There's never a boring moment. Even when I'm sleeping, I'm like thinking and like, I overthink thinking.
Yeah.
And, I knew. Stop. But, squirrel. For me, like, all that gone, and I'd be trying to find my peace. Bro, I've never even thought that was possible, bro.
Yeah.
And up until a month ago, when I got my heart crushed, and like, I'm like you now. I have not had the first thought in 10 months, in 12 or 13 days, I can't remember which one it is. I haven't had the first urge to get high, to use anything. Now, I do like to change the way I feel, especially when I'm hurting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually run to women. Like, that's, we talked about this on the first time I came on the podcast.
Yeah.
And some people will call that addict behaviors. Me personally, I'm coming to the understanding that mankind just has a sinful nature.
Right. Yeah.
And for me, I like to change the way I feel. I don't like to hurt.
Yeah. I think everybody does, wants to change the way they feel. It's just they do things that are, you know.
Healthier.
Yeah. Healthier. Yeah, it won't get them in jail. That's what they do.
You know, I wasn't doing anything that could have got me in jail, but you know what, though? I was hurting people, bro, and I was hurting myself, too.
Yeah.
I have, like, I'm trying right now to work on.
You're saying that's not in alignment with spiritual fit.
Man, it's not, bro.
Right. So not only is it all these practices like you mentioned, but it's also the way you live and the way you treat others.
Man, bro, 100%. Yeah. For me, like, I got to work on feeling my feelings, but making sure I don't make anybody else feel them.
Yeah.
And I can do that unintentionally.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even mean to hurt you. I don't even know how, but oh man, I didn't lie. I didn't do none of that.
Yeah.
But like, you know, you can, like me, I'm very, and I told somebody last night, I told my ex last night, and boy, I should have never opened that door with her. But, you know, she said, like, yeah, you're really good at that.
Yeah, and that's fun to hear.
I mean, no, I wanted to hear that because I'm trying to get right.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like you said how you hate when you hear those cliches and they're right. Like, you don't want to hear it. You're like, man, forget you. But really, you're like.
That was not my facial expression, but yes.
I'm pretty sure that was mine. I don't know why you keep doing this.
It looked like you were constipated for a second. I got concerned.
Man, bro, listen, I don't do boy no more. At all.
Like, you regular now.
You regular. No more rabbit turds. Hey, look, we going there.
I'm not going to, no. I'm not going there.
Okay, listen, don't open the door with me. I kick doors open.
I like that. I like what you're saying and what you're expanding on.
I'm just kidding, bro.
And because I think that's what a lot of us, that's the thing, like, you got to keep digging or you face plant the dirt. You got to keep growing. You have to keep, like, that's a key. That the difference I see between people who either don't make it or are completely miserable, it's that they stop the growing, they stop the digging, right? And so whatever it is, to consistently, constantly be learning, getting books, buy a bunch of books, like read. I don't like to sit and read. I can't. My mind goes. So I got audiobooks.
You listen to it.
So I like dove into a bunch of theology stuff because that stuff's really interesting to me.
Yeah.
You know, I learn and get certifications and coaching. I would do all these different things because I have to consistently be growing and expanding.
Yeah,
you know, because otherwise, there's something about that. Being still too long.
Complacency. Yeah. Gonna get you.
Yeah. Well, what it is boredom. And I'm not good when I'm bored.
Oh, me neither. That's when I do dumb stuff.
Yes, when I do it. If I'm bored and tired, guaranteed, I need a chaperone. Well,
with me, it's bored and money.
If I'm bored and got money,
Lord have mercy.
Yeah. That's hard too.
When I'm bored, I ain't never got money. So.
Well, you say, okay, yeah. If I got money, we ain't bored.
Yeah. All right, so that was good. All right, now let's go to this live and let live.
What does it even mean?
Good.
Keep
coming
back.
Keep coming back. You ever go like with somebody in a meeting, someone's chair is like something really hard, and some asshole in the corner goes, yes, keep coming back. Yeah. It's like,
it's the
on.
Worst. It's the, oh, no, that's the whole, I was going to derail
it's
that
so
topic.
Condescending.
It is. There's so many condescending things that I've heard at meetings, especially like when there's, so there's this meeting that I went to. I hadn't been to it in a couple of years because I had moved, and mm-hmm. then I moved back. And only a handful of people remembered me. And they're like, oh, my God, you're here. And they're, like, introducing me to, like, other people. And they're like, this is Sarah. Like, she used to come to this meeting. And then people are like, oh, well, just stick with it. I'm like, I've been sticking with it for 2.5 years. I'm like, I just moved.
Just because I ain't been here don't
I
mean
I go back out. I just moved a little further.
Yeah, yeah, like, I moved an hour away from here.
You know how
then I moved an hour
do.
Back.
Right.
I'm like.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me just read a section of this, Live and Let Live. However, it is perfectly natural that we will still encounter some people who get on our nerves.
Like that one.
We may find that with our friends, coworkers, family members still treat us as if we're drinking. It may take them a little while to believe that we've really stopped. To put this concept of live and let live into practice, we must use this fact. There are people that sometimes say things we disagree with or do things we don't like. Learning to live with differences is essential to our comfort. Ooh. It is exactly in those cases that we have found it extremely helpful to say to ourselves, oh, well, live and let live.
See, that's something my sponsor's actually been talking to me about. No, that's actually how it was written. It is. With the font, you're supposed to read it like that. The more you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's italicized.
Keep shooting me, little girl.
Under, like, a little
not
emoji.
The little girl.
Keep shooting me, mom.
It's got the emoji like this.
Nope. Nope. We're not going there with that one.
Your sponsor, you say what?
Anyway, my sponsor, she's been talking to me a lot about radical acceptance.
Oh, shit.
Which is like the live and let live. You know, yeah. It's like I like accepting that I am where I'm supposed to be right now, but also accepting that that person is where they're supposed to be right now, which sucks because there's like this part of me that, you know, when someone says something that I think is so misguided, so wrong, so they just, you know, whatever I think because I'm God, right? So whatever I think, it's like, no, they need to be fixed. They need to be corrected. It's not necessarily my place. And so it's like, oh, well. And you're like, bless their heart.
My version of that I'm learning right now is, and it's been like a year trying to like really do this, is to let people love me the way they want to love me. Mm-hmm. Not the way I want them to love me. And it was really, really hard in the beginning. But then once I let people, my old sponsor would tell me that. He'd say, Christian, you got to let people love you the way they want to love you. And once I started letting go, and then it was like I opened, it was like it became apparent to me how much love I was really getting. But I was rejecting it all because it didn't come to me in the way that I thought it should have came from the person or whatever. That's like that radical acceptance of like, you get to show up how you want to show up. And if this is how you love, who am I to reject it just because it didn't come exactly how I thought it should have came?
Yeah.
Yeah. Live and let live.
If you're waiting on people to love you the way you want to be loved, boy, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah. I was hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been doing that my whole life.
Banging my head up against the wall all the time. Miserable and wondering why.
Yeah.
You know, and missing out on all of the blessing that was getting presented to me because these people were like, this is how, you know. So for you, live and let live. You've had a lot of things going on where you've had to just.
What I hear whenever that, what comes to my mind is respond, not react. Because I'm a reactor. Like.
Who's not?
Yeah.
I'm retarded. I've literally had my head bounced off the floor like a basketball, still talking to him, trying to react, you know, like, but. And the way I react. I'm very emotional. I'm very passionate. Just, bah, bro, you can't be like that. And I've hurt people for so long that my biggest fear now is hurting people. And I'm also working on being honest and not brutally honest.
Yeah.
Because, bro, like, when I finally got honest, I got brutally honest. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you about yourself. You got to know this. Like, I got to put you in your place, like what you were just saying. And, bro, like, I did that a couple times, and I was right about what I said. But, bro, I seen it in the person. Like, I didn't want to hurt them. You know, yeah. Like, I can be humble, and I can be gentle. I can be meek.
Yeah.
I can be gentle. I don't have to crush you. Because, really, that's ego, right?
Yeah. When people are like, it's just the truth, or, you know, I'm just being honest.
Yeah, you know? Like, I heard, you know, the most important part of brutal honesty is the brutality part. There's nothing, you know, it's not about the honesty. It's about, you know, I'm right, and so now I can go hard. No, it's like, you know, with love.
Right.
You know, because you can say the same thing and change your tone and change your delivery, but you're still being honest. You're still being, you know, transparent. You just 100%. Don't have to be brutal.
I'll tell you a good thing. Try this one time with your three closest friends and message them and ask them to tell you what your biggest character defect is that they see in you.
That's scary.
It's scary.
They got a lot to pick from.
But your closest friends will say it in a way that you can receive it. It's like people.
I don't know. Bro, have you seen my friends? They all got tattoos on their face and gold teeth in their mouth and love that they write now. Like,
oh, they finally get a chance to get you back.
Boy, I finally get a chance.
It's just like, just because it's true don't mean you get to say it any way you want. That's my thing.
Yeah, but not everybody understands that. So, you know, even if they're a close friend, I don't mean they understand that. Yeah. They're mean.
It's a pretty good exercise.
You know what, though? Like, really, like, some my closest friends are probably going to be mean, like, just straight and direct. I ain't going to put no cut on it for you, Reeves. Like, now, it might be some people who don't know me that well that might proceed with.
Well, there's a difference. You can be direct, but without being. But it's not going to be brutal.
You know what, though? Man, today, and I feel like in today's society, people have gotten so far away from being direct that when people are direct, like, they take it as you're being aggressive or you're being brutal.
Yeah, but you're only responsible for your part in it. 100%. So it's like, you know, well, my delivery was respectful. They, you know, took it disrespectfully. Then you dialogue about it and figure out, okay, because there's definitely some people that me just talking the way I am, they're like, they feel disrespected by me. Facts, and then that makes me feel bad because I don't want to be a disrespectful person. So I'm like, let's dialogue about it. And then I change how I talk to them specifically, because it's not, again, it's not an issue with how I talk or how I am. It's the issue with their perception of it, and they ain't healed that portion of themselves.
So you change the way you talk
to specific people because they're on a different. That? It's annoying, but they're on a different portion of their healing journey than I am. So I got to accept where they are.
6 or 7 months ago, somebody sent me something on Facebook. One of my closest friends, love her to death. My twin soul, she's an idiot too. She sent me something that said, I will not be less of me to make you feel better about yourself.
Oh, I did not say I was making myself less.
It's in the context of trying to be helpful.
You're changing the way you talk, like, and you're toning it down, that's being less of who you really are.
No, because I'm saying, so, like, there's some people I can be direct. I'd be like, hey, you messed up here. And they'd be like, oh, you're right. I'm going to fix it. But then there's other people, you got to lead in with something they did well, or else they don't take it as a correction. They don't take it as correcting their action. They take it as a personal, like, attack on their character, which is not what I'm doing. So I'm not changing who I am. I'm not making myself less. I'm just meeting that person where
I always have to tell Leslie, like, she's really straightforward and honest, like with my creative stuff, like films or whatever. And she's like the most general market person, right? Like, the content's not for her. She's the normal person.
Normie.
Earther. So I had to explain to her, like, look, when you give creative feedback, start with something good, then move on to the opportunities.
Yeah, but she might be so, like.
She's never really, if she's listening, she's usually not wrong.
But
it's rare that her notes are not
sometimes
right.
Being gentle, though, does.
But if she gives me the positives of it, then I'm more open to receive the criticism of it, and then I'm more willing to make the change. So it's what it is. It's like, I think whenever I'm like working with somebody and they've given me permission to speak into their life, like my goal is to be helpful. Mm-hmm. And so what is the most helpful thing that I can do in that situation? And I have to make that as determination, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. This was Live and Let Live. Mm. I told you, this is going
to
be good.
Show me how to live.
I feel like you couldn't have got two more opposite people.
Yeah.
I feel like you're judging.
But you guys are also very much alike.
Yeah, bro. I've heard that Atlanta come out of you. One time you went over here moving your head. You went so ATL.
I've never seen that. I like it.
I told you.
Big energy.
All right, so I'm going to give us three. You guys pick which one. Using the Serenity Prayer, changing old routines, or making use of telephone therapy. Which one you want to jump onto?
Well, definitely not number three.
What?
No?
No. Process of elimination. I think the first two are really good, but number three, we don't got to do that one.
Yeah. I don't know if you call what I do on the telephone therapy, bro. Like, I use it for...
I don't want to know what you do with the telephone.
See, why you had to do that?
Why'd you got to say it like that?
You're right. Just go. Man, you go. Keep going. We knocked out the third. Which one are you choosing?
Well, okay. Serenity Prayer, that's basic. But what was the second one more time?
Changing old routine.
Yeah, that one's good. Look, after this is done, we can go fight out back.
Oh, hey, listen, but it's being recorded. I don't want no problem. I'm going to go outside with my hands up. I'm on probation until I'm 50, woman.
Changing old routines.
No, I think that one's a good one.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's easy to say the Serenity Prayer. It's hard to apply the Serenity Prayer. It's easy to say it, but changing old routines. That one took a hot minute.
Well, for me, my using was all kind of like outside of the... I kind of had this nice little life, and then I would just leave that to go do my thing and then come back into this. So for me, the routine thing was a little different, I guess, because I had such a positive, I wouldn't say positive, but a safe environment that I was in at work and at home.
While you were drinking and using?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord, have mercy.
Yeah, I'm what you call like a,
me neither.
high bottom drunk or functioning. Like, I liked to work, and I liked to kind of go from highs, and then I like to have a couple days sober to kind of work and get it in, and then I like to go back. Mm-hmm. And so I really liked that. That was fun for me. And then certain substances I could use while I worked. And then certain ones were after work. And I loved this whole, like, kind of, it was all like marionette control. Mm-hmm. Mm. So whatever situation I was in might constitute, oh, I'm not going to be high today. That was like a high in and of itself. Because it was a change of mindset from what I was in.
You, like, that would be a high, but, oh, I'm not going to be high. And you were happy about that?
Yeah, because it was like, it was different.
I would just rather, I'm telling you, that's how weird it was. I'm out my mind instead of having to just sit there and.
I mean, I'd be angry if I knew I wasn't going to get high that day.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I don't know, maybe it's the substances I was using or what, but that was how I liked it. I liked that mixture of it for me.
Yeah, so you really had like a routine.
So routines, yeah.
I didn't.
Bruh.
That was, because it was like the routine was, I ain't got it, go get it. And so then getting sober, it's like now I have all this time. And
so what was the routine you had to change, an old routine that you had to adjust?
All of them. I couldn't keep a single one of them because it was everything. Every single thing I did was in pursuit of the next high.
Like that.
Every single thing. Yeah. So I couldn't. There was not a single thing that I could bring into sobriety and be like, "Oh yeah, I can do that." Like, no.
Yeah. For real.
For you too.
But what?
Everything
and it got crazy, man. Like, and it like, Lord have mercy. The only routine I had was insanity, dude. Like crazy chaos. I'm talking about like.
Was that harder to get to lose your dependence on the chaos?
I'm confused. I'm not smart enough.
I still haven't lost my dependence on
that.
I love the
what
chaos.
Does that mean? I don't understand what you're asking. Hold on. I need to understand.
a lot of people were, the chaos is a part of what the whole thing was. Oh, what?
Listen, but you know what?
It was fun. And then you get, and then you remove the drugs, but you still like want chaos in your life.
So
did you have that?
I have been drawn and attracted to crazy and chaos my whole life. And I still am.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
100%. But my shirt says God Mob. My vision is God Mob. I'm going back to the crazy and the chaos with a light. And I'm finna shine. I'm going to go back to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. I'm going back to the dark with a light this time. I'm not just going to the dark, dark. Like, I'm going to make a difference. Yeah. 100%. And now, I am very cautious about what I let in my life. And what I allow me to get my energy to. And it might sound kind of, because I'm sitting here saying I'm going back to the crazy and the chaos, but that's one particular thing I'm going for. And that's to save lives and do it with what I do.
Yeah.
But all the extra drama, toxic, like, you know, I can't, that. And, dude, I was, I can't even tell you what I was doing. There's no statute of limitations on a lot of things, and we're on camera right now.
Yeah. I would like to just make one comment about the telephone therapy because it happened recently, a couple days ago.
Okay.
I was, everything's fine.
We hurt his feelings.
What is No.
What does that even mean?
Everything's fine. I'm sitting at the house. Everything's great. No, everyone's healthy and happy and great. And I'm just feeling like, and I'm like, I need connection. And so I called David, my buddy. And we just talk on the phone for like 45 minutes. We just talk shit. We just make jokes. We just caught up a little bit. But I didn't call him and go, I'm really worried about. Or
so that's what telephone therapy is? Like,
well, I don't know. It was
like
for me.
Get me up out of this.
That was the first time that I kind of like, I'm probably sure I've done that a lot. I do that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on the phone a lot with people. People call a lot. But
so that's basically what I did with you that night that I was going into that prayer room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But oh, yeah, that was one time when I did it and I said, and when I got off the phone with him, I was like, dude, I feel like so much better.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk about any of my problems or any of his problems. We were just making jokes and just, it was just having that sense of a, which I can only get. Because I'm telling you, like my wife and I talk a lot, but I can't, whatever that is that I got with these other people in recovery who've lived that life, that's a very unique connection.
Yeah.
And I needed that. I needed that moment. And dude, I just felt, I was like, dang, dude, I needed that call.
I got a couple homeboys. Like Shane's one of them. Like, yeah, just take me up out of there, you know, like, and they might not even realize that they doing it.
Right. Yeah. It's almost more therapeutic that than let me list all the things that's going wrong in my life and let's talk about it. Like, that's like, oh, God.
Because I'll do that, too. Like, there's a lot of times.
Sometimes you need that, too.
I'll start the phone call. I'll be like, hey, I don't feel good. Just tell me, how's your day going? Like, I specifically do not want to talk about my day. Like, you know, and I set that precedent, you know. But then I have other friends who, like, they can tell me what's going on in their life. I'll tell them what's going on in my life. And then we start making fun of each other. Not fun of each other, but we start making jokes about what's going on in the other person's life.
We're making fun of each other.
Well, yeah, well, but it's making jokes. So
that's pretty powerful to call somebody and just go, how are you doing? If you just call someone and ask them, how are you doing? I'm checking in on you. I'm good. How you doing? I'm great. You know, and it's not lying, right? You know, most of us are doing pretty great. You know, we got a lot of stuff happening in our lives. I think everybody here got arms and legs at work and ears at work and eyes at work mostly with some help.
Yeah, but them hearts hurt sometimes, boy.
But I'm saying that what ends up happening is it's like flipping the script. It's like tricking the wisdom. It's like when you ask somebody else how they feel and then they start telling you what they're going through. I become immediately kind of like relieved of my own.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like picking up your call at that time. It did a lot for me.
Yeah, you told me.
I texted you back. I said, dude, that was like, I needed to hear you struggling with that to remind me that I'm probably struggling with the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I needed to hear that. But we didn't talk about anything that was going on with me, but it still was very helpful for me. All right, let's go to this last question because I really want to know what you guys have to say about this last one.
I'm scared.
Ready?
Yeah, yeah.
steering clear.
Oh, we got a new font now?
Steering clear of emotional entanglements.
I don't know how to do that.
Hey, man, I didn't even hear that. I just got the funniest. I'm sorry. I shouldn't even look at that phone.
Steering clear of emotional entanglements.
Ain't no way that's what. Hey, I just got a text from my mentor, and he was like, hey, bro, you better leave that girl alone after the show. Keep it moving. He watching it right now.
Oh.
And like, he knows what I got going on. He's so silly, but he knows me.
And that's and like, the question that comes
that's
up.
The, boy, that's crazy. His name's Bible Brent.
Bible Brent.
Yeah, that's what I call him.
Is he white?
Yeah.
His name's Brent.
You know, how many black dudes you know named Brent?
Tony, you're doing a really good job of sitting still.
He's struggling. He's
that's
struggling.
The hands crossed for me. Boy, that's Pastor Tony over there.
That is. That's the deacon. Yeah. That's the deacon right there.
I couldn't do it, bro.
I love how we're avoiding answering the question.
What was the question
steering
again?
Steering clear of emotional entanglements.
Why would they say that?
Same reason they told me not to get in a relationship for the first year.
Yeah, but who listens to that?
They didn't tell me, don't go sleep with a girl. They said, don't get in a relationship.
Oh, okay, so you were like, okay, cool, but I can sleep with girls.
Oh, man.
Oh, see, my sponsor, she told me, she said, you can sleep with whoever you want. You're just going to remember it now, which was way worse. So that helped me steer clear.
Yeah, she's got the reverse psychology going on.
Because mm-hmm. it's like, do I want to remember? I don't want to remember that, actually.
Emotional.
What's an emotional entanglement? Let's start there.
Men.
Women.
Yeah.
People I love. Like, I love hard, and I end up hurting hard. Now, I also, like, I'm really trying to
boy,
work
you're rolling the shit out of that ball.
But I've been doing it the whole time.
He's stressed.
I've been doing it the whole time.
No, but for...
It is what it is. It's my
that
ball.
That ain't even going to be a basketball anymore. It's going to be really? A basket.
Look, Bray had a line right here before we started. He ain't got no line right here no more. Where'd my squirrel go? What were we talking about?
Emotional entanglement.
Love hard, hurt hard.
Bro, like, I have found myself putting expectations on the people that I love.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I ain't gonna lie to you, bro. I want to have a couple people I can have expectations with.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm just getting resentment after resentment after resentment. Thinking about putting somebody in the trunk of my... I shouldn't have said that on TV. But... You know, for me, I am a very emotional person. Like, and I am working on just responding and not just, you hurt me. I'm going to hurt you back, whether it's,
yeah,
you know, but let her go. She's smarter.
On this topic? Like, I got you on sebum and staccato, man, but emotional entanglements. So when I hear the word entanglement, like, I just think of spaghetti.
I think of Jada Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, I don't think
she
of that
brought
woman.
That name. She brought that word. She had an entanglement. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. You think it's spaghetti?
I think it's spaghetti. Yeah, because it's not like a union. You know, like a puzzle piece would be like a union, but an entanglement is messy. You know, it's got a bunch of pieces that are intertwined and it's complicated. So steering clear of them, I don't know, because I still don't know. Like, that's why, you know, I guess. You know, having that network is just important, because I don't know when I'm approaching a mess, but they do. Just like I know when they're approaching a mess, but I can't spot the mess for myself.
Right.
So just having those people that you can trust to talk, like, I don't know, man. Steering clear of, I've never heard that one.
You've never heard that?
Mm-mm.
Oh. Well, you know, I think, like.
What does that mean to you?
I think what you explained, that spaghetti is pretty good.
I don't even know what that means, bro. You tell me a wise one.
You don't know what spaghetti means?
So basically, like, this is true, I think, of anybody, any human. But we're never taught about the internal world, right? We're not in school, and they go teach us how to control our thoughts or control our emotions. they'll tell us to control our emotions, but then no one ever teaches us how to do that, right? Mm-hmm. The first time any of us, especially the blessing of all of us who are in recovery have, is that we're now being taught how to do. We're now being taught how to manage and exist in this internal world. But most people aren't. And most people who aren't, haven't had the experiences we have, or aren't alcoholic or addict or substance use disorder, they will never have to face these things. Mm-hmm. So to me, when we're just a bunch of people running around getting emotionally entangled. So for somebody who's just for the first time trying this journey of untangling their own emotions, right? We'll conflate everything. I talked to a guy once, old head, and I was like going through the stuff, and he goes, "What are you feeling right now?" "Well, I feel like," he goes, "man, you happy, sad, mad? Which one do you feel?" And I'm like, "Sad." So I couldn't even call what I was feeling until he had to call it out of me. Mm-hmm. So I'm already emotionally entangled internally by myself. I don't know nothing. I'll just be sitting in this room by myself, emotionally tangled, you know? Mm-hmm. So now you take that and you go to somebody else who's got that same internal world going on. And now we're going to try to take my mess and that mess and let's put it all together and then it's going to work somehow.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
It's so successful.
And it's not, because it's reflecting and reverberating back off of me and that, and it's just a whole mess. And so that's what I think it means, steering clear of emotional entanglements, because we haven't yet learned to untangle our own emotions. Now, when you get two people who have done that work and have some sense of knowledge of self, and you have another person who has knowledge of self, and they come together, that could be something beautiful. I even reflect that back in my own relationship with my wife. We've been together 24 years. And really the last 3-4 years have started to become really good. Like, it took that long. We were really young when we had kids, and we lived in LA, and we moved from Bakersfield to LA, and it was like, it was chaos. It was hell for a long time. It was really hard to be in a marriage. But as we both kind of sorted through our own stuff, and learn to concede and learn to consider the other person and to let go of the expectations and all that stuff. So the more I became less emotionally entangled within, the more I'm able to show up for her, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And it took a long time, partially because, you know, that's how much of a mess I was, you know?
Yeah.
And it took a long time. So that's what I think it means with emotional entanglement is, untangle your own shit, get that shit clear and clean to the place where that you exist more in peace than not. Mm. Then when you enter into these other things, you can either be of help, or you're also, I think a big thing is, especially in early recovery, there's still a level of fundamental hatred for self. Fundamentally, I think in early recovery, it takes a long time for you to go, "I love me. I'm okay with me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm dope. I love me. And I'm not going to let anybody just come in and jack my house up." You know what I mean? Yeah. But it takes a while to get to that state of going, "I have worth and value, and I don't need to lower my worth and value to be with you, because you're the only person I think will ever give me attention." And it's like, "Lord, this is the best I'm going to get."
Yeah.
And that's what I think a lot of people do, is like they think, "Well, this person puts up with everything." And oh, so, no, bro.
Oh, I agree, but we ain't going to do all that. I know now.
And I'm you know now.
Yeah.
And thank God, you know, like you went through that process. And I know it sucked.
I know what I
But now to, you know something. Now. Yeah. You know something more about yourself
we
now.
Over here.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Any final thoughts? Anything we didn't cover?
That's my bodyguard.
Did you learn any new words tonight?
Man, leave me alone. I ain't got to be nice to you no more. The podcast.
Wait, this was you being nice? I want to do over.
Okay. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to The Most High Show. Thank you to Sarah with an H, my man Reeves. I said before, we couldn't have tackled this topic without you two. And I'm pretty sure we'll do some other stuff. You guys have been really fun to talk to. and joyous and very honest. And I really appreciate that with you both. So if you need help, reach out. You're worthy of the work it takes to get better. And if you can love yourself just a little bit more, or maybe even close to how we love you, then your life can be really, truly free. I believe that. So reach out if you need help. Yeah. This has been The Most High Show. Peace.
Peace, love, and hope.